Hello, welcome to the Girl and Duck podcast. I'm Jen Storer, acclaimed children's book author and chief inspirationalist. That's not a term I made up. At girlandduck.com, creative writing, creative life. At Girl and Duck, I take you on a journey from exploring the art of kidlit creation right through to mastering the art of kidlit creation. To find out more about the courses and products that I offer, pop over to the website. You're bound to find inspiration and support and something to absolutely love over there. That's www.girlandduck.com. But in the meantime, stick around because we've got lots to talk about. I have got something very, very special today. It's always really such a joy for me to interview someone who's doing the work and getting there and achieving. So this is super, super exciting to have a past Scribble student with us today. Also, Fiona has been in and out of the Girl and Duck community for many, many years. So I'm absolutely thrilled to be able to interview Fiona Lloyd today. So what I'm going to do is just read you a quick bio and then we'll jump in, okay? So Fiona Lloyd was born in the beautiful northeast of England, near picturesque countryside, windswept beaches, and the vibrant cultural city of Newcastle upon Tyne. She dreamed of writing in a cosy country cottage and of life as a theatre actress, but as it often does, life got in the way. Working and travelling instead, Fiona floated in the Dead Sea, climbed the Sydney Harbour Bridge, gave guided tours in Holland, and fell in love with all things Greek during her 2 years in Athens. Amongst her myriad of interesting jobs, Fiona worked as a television colourist on Home and Away, This is Greece, and Secrets of Britain's Great Cathedrals. That's a mixed bag. She has works in several anthologies for children, is a role model for books in homes, coach with the Harding Miller Education Foundation, and schools program coordinator for the Words on the Waves Writers Festival. Fiona loves storytelling in all forms, especially theatre, television, and books. Now settled near Sydney with her husband and three children, she mostly travels in her head to marvellous, magical places. Being Jimmy Baxter is her debut middle grade novel. Fiona, I'm thrilled to have you here. Welcome to Girl and Duck.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Jen. It's very exciting.
When Tina, your publicist from Penguin, contacted me, I was just, well, there was a little breakdown in communication, wasn't there, with Australia Post, because the postie turned up with this gorgeous book. And nothing, just nothing. And Tina's email had gone into spam or something. So I just thought, oh, Penguin is sending me a book. That's lovely. So I got this book surprise package in the mail, and then things started. Then we caught up and realized what was going on. So I'm thrilled to talk to you about this book, Fiona.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
The first thing I think I will kick off with is the actual story, because I've spent the most delicious 2 days reading this novel, and I always know when I've got a novel that I love because I want to get back to it. You know, it's like a secret little place that I can escape to during the day, and it's like this treat that you know I'm going to go back into Jimmy Baxter's world.
Aww,
and
you, nice.
you look forward to it. So So that was just such a thrill for me to sort of be in that space. Can you tell us a bit about the book and about where it came from, just everything about it, really?
Yeah, sure. So it's a novel for 10 to 14-year-olds approximately. I'd say it's a bit quirky, perhaps. It's essentially about a boy, Jimmy, Jimmy Branthwaite, who thinks he's off on holiday with his mum. But he soon finds out that mum's actually taken him on the run from dad, who isn't a very nice person. So dad unfortunately discovers them, and Jimmy then decides, no, we're not going home. I'm going to take mum and we're going to keep on going. So, starting life in a new town, they choose a new name, Jimmy Baxter. And then Jimmy has to settle in, which is very difficult. He finds a whole heap of characters to support him or hinder him. But essentially, the storyline comes in where he's trying to help mum get better from depression and all the antics that he gets up to in the process of that.
It's just a beautiful book. It's so tender and so sensitive, but it's also hilarious. Like, there's just laugh out. He is such an endearing character. Like, as a mother, you just want to bundle him up and take him home, don't you? Like, he's just such a fantastic character that, that just evokes so much empathy in the reader. Where did he come from for you? Where did he How did he stride into your life?
Well, it was actually due to Morris Gleitzman. I had been reading his Once series and absolutely loved his character Felix. And when I don't think he'd written his final one at that point. So my mind was, oh, what happens next? I wonder if I could make my own story up of what happened to Felix. And then it sort of morphed into, well, what happened if that kid was in Australia? We were on holiday at the time, so we were sort of driving through all this landscape like Dubbo and Mudgee.
I got a sense of that. It's got a great sense of place.
Yeah, so that's sort of where that came from. But then I don't know, he just sort of formed himself. It sounds really naff. I know some people don't like this, but I honestly feel he was given to me.
No,
I haven't
it's not
felt like
naff.
that about anything else that I've written, so it
Yep.
was different.
Yep.
Yeah, he was quite a strong character straight away, and I really wanted to write a gentle boy. So,
Oh, he's super sensitive. He's beautiful. Yeah. This ch and the first person, so you've gone with first person. Any did you play around with that, or did that come through straight away? Because that's, I mean, that's lent so much quirk because he's so much in his head, and the way he interprets things is just divine. So did you play with that, or again, was that part of the gift of Jimmy Baxter? Did he just
Yeah,
bring?
it certainly was. Yeah, it was very much an eye. I do normally play around. I normally do two or three different versions of things to see what feels right. But he was very much, no, nope, this is me and this is how it looks.
No, it's just just a beautiful, beautiful book, and I enjoyed every minute of it. And all the characters too, all the characters around him are also beautifully rounded, beautifully fleshed out, but you do keep a very tight focus on Jimmy. And I've got to say, it does have a very Morris Gleitzman feel about it. So now that you've said that, I can really see the influence of his work and his, that gentle, sensitive approach that he has. It's really come through beautifully in this book. And it's tough. It's a tough, they're tough themes that you've dealt with, but I think you've been, very respectful of them. You haven't sensationalized them at all. You've just it's just it's a beautiful read. Like, totally, highly, highly recommend
Oh, thank
it.
you. I did feel, I suppose, a lot of the mental health side of the topics are drawn from my experience. So it's something I try to incorporate in my work because I think it's really important to get these conversations out there, even though sometimes that's uncomfortable. But yeah, I think especially after COVID, if a child reads that and go, oh, I felt like that, or these things don't happen to just me, then that's a really important conversation to start.
And I also love the intergenerational play that you've got going on too. That's very beautiful. And adds so much nuance to it as well. I see here in your bio that you said, that you love all forms of storytelling, but particularly theatre and television. I felt it was very filmic. It's got a, it's, it just plays out like this really beautiful film. Were you aware of that as you were writing it, or again, was that just part of the gift of the story?
Well, that's how I just see the world, which is not always a good thing because that can go either way with, catastrophizing or not. But I did try to, to sort of make that stronger in this particular case. So I was quite deliberate with how I placed things or how I created the dialogue, perhaps to make that seem like a scene, a real scene.
Yeah, it feels like that. And it's a very strong arc. It's got a very strong narrative arc, but it's also got a very strong character arc as well. And I'm not saying it at all that it's contrived, not at all. The complete opposite. It's just woven in so seamlessly, which is again what makes it such a pleasure. So
Thank you.
yeah. Oh, what did I want to say? There's something else. So yeah, so for those of us, those of our listeners who are aspiring and emerging authors, let me ask you some of the questions that they will want to know. How long did it take you to write this book?
Okay, so quick in a way, well, quick for me, because I would say normally I've tried writing two other books. One was a disaster, one I think is okay. So that they're normally a year to 18-month process.
And they were middle grade novels as well.
No, one was a terrible fantasy for adults.
Okay, yeah. Your apprentice book.
Yes.
Good for
So
you doing the work. I love it.
that was in about 2017 when I decided I was going to be a writer, and so that was the test. Could I do it? And then the other one is, I'd say, lower YA, slightly older audience than this. But this one, the first draft was actually written in 4 months,
Okay.
which was a short, so it was 30,000 words then. It ended up being 45 after
It's
all.
45. I thought it was a bit more than 30. Yeah. Yep.
Yes, but it did come out very quickly, initially as a short story.
Okay.
So once I had the idea, I literally spent maybe 4 nights just, getting it all out. And that was about 3,500 words. And I did edit that for one of the Scribbles comps.
Yeah.
So I played, I think I must have taken the word count down for that. And then I put that into a critique group. And they said, oh, you really could do more with this. There's lots of places to go. So it was actually their encouragement that made me go, okay, maybe let's play with this. And it more scenes kept coming, and that's how the first draft ended up. And then, yes, revision, revision, revision.
So tell me about that. Did you how did you go? So first of all, you were revising and rewriting on your own.
Yes. Yeah.
And how did you come to these decisions that you needed to keep rewriting? I know that's a weird question, but
Yeah. I suppose I like to have things very clean before I show them to people. So I have a list of things to go back and check, like
okay.
five senses. Are there more opportunities for humor and emotion in here? Is the POV correct? Are you using a lot of my pronouns and not the to make it more personal? Dialogue hasn't been my strong point, so that's something I go back. Can I replace the narrative with dialogue? Because I'm very descriptive. So just, where can I break that up? Where is it important for someone to speak and not just be observed? And then go through all the filter words. So I literally do sweeps for each one of those things.
Wow, that's fascinating.
Yeah, it's a bit of a process. I don't know if it's a bit obsessive.
I don't, well, from another obsessive person to, no, it's not obsessive. It's
Oh,
normal. No,
dear.
I think that's a really powerful process, and that's constantly bringing out the best and the best and the best and the best.
And it does add, I mean, it obviously grew an extra 15,000 words. Well, I'd say it probably grew an extra 10 to start with, and then through the editing process, it grew again. But yes, so you're obviously, when you come to a point where you think, oh, yes, I could expand the humor here, then you end up writing another 500 words perhaps, and gradually that, that builds up.
Yeah. So at what point then did it fall into the, were penguin the first people to see it? Or did it have any rejections before that?
So I didn't submit it as such, but I took it to Kathy Tasker, who is a well-known lady in the industry. She now does mentoring services. So I took it to her, and that was probably the fifth revision.
So you
And
took it to her for a manuscript assessment, or
yes,
yeah?
sorry, yes.
No, it's
So,
okay.
and she was very thorough. She's a no nonsense. If you're gonna be scared, don't go to Kathy. But I really wanted somebody who was gonna, rip it apart, which she did. And it was great. Like I had none of the, I've got the brain notes in there, which are little notes that Jimmy writes or pulls out of his head. So none of that was in there. There was no stuff. And Kathy said, you need stuff in a middle grade novel. You need something visual. So that was initiated by her. And then she also sort of suggested I rework the end because it wasn't clean enough. So then I went home, put it away for about 3 weeks and went, no. And then went, right, come on, you can do this. So I took it back. She kind of ticked it off. And then I started, what did I do? Oh, I booked actually two more manuscript assessments through the Creative Kids Tales Festival. So one was with Nicola Santilli from Allen and Unwin, and the other was Claire Halifax, who at the time was still at Scholastic. So I thought, put it through those guys, and then with their feedback, I'll change it one more time and then I'll submit it. But at the same time, a colleague of mine on the Words on the Waves committee, who was the ex-head of trade sales at Penguin, had a look at it. And golden ticket, she said, would you like me to put this in front of somebody?
Wow.
So there was a crossover. I did have my manuscript assessments and did get great feedback. So I did make changes. Nicola asked for the first 100 pages based on the assessment. Claire also agreed to read it. So I did email Penguin and say, I have had some interest. Have you had a chance to look at it? I'd love you to still do that if you're willing. And there was a bit of back and forwards. And then many weeks later, after submitting it to an agent, fourth person in the process, lots of things happened at the same time, but Penguin ended up getting to it first.
Wow, I love these sorts of
So
stories.
a real mesh of dates and times and everything overlapping each other. Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. And it's not a neat story, is it? It's never like, and then just one day when I'd lost all hope, I had a phone call. I mean, that happens occasionally, but this was a typical. Do it again, change it out, do this, show it to this person, show it to that person, da, 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 da. And you
Yes,
stood your
definitely.
ground through it all and you kept the faith, even probably half the time you weren't even aware that you were keeping the faith. But
Well, the interesting part of it as well was that I think it was Claire. Her feedback was mainly about the synopsis that I'd submitted with the manuscript. And that was invaluable because that is something I know lots of people struggle with, the actual business side of submission. So I did spend 2 months actually, learning to write the synopsis, the pitch, the three sentence pitch, the five sentence pitch, all those things, just so I had a catalogue of things to draw on if any of those were needed.
So can you? So from the point of actually starting with what was just a little short story to the point of signing up, how long was that?
That was 9 months.
Okay.
Yes.
So that's quick.
It's very quick, very, very quick. Yes.
And so then you signed up, and then what happened?
Then nothing. It was literally silence for almost a year.
How did you cope throughout that year?
Well, gosh, it was so strange. I was trying so hard just to be patient because I thought I don't want to be that person that's always going, "What's happening? What's happening?" So I had signed on with the agent at the time, which is Brian Cook. So he was great. I did occasionally email him and said, "Have you heard anything?" But I didn't want to go direct to Heather Curdy, who ended up being my editor. Sure, she's got a million things to do. So Brian was, he said, no. And then eventually, yes, Heather got in touch and the wheels started turning. So it actually ended up being 2 years between the contract being signed and the book coming out.
When does the book actually come out?
4th of July.
4th of July. Oh, okay, 4th of July. Yeah.
Really? Yes.
So exciting. So yeah, so 2 years. So yeah, that's and again, that's fairly normal. Was there much toing and froing and rewriting, or it sounds like you had it pretty clean to begin with?
Yeah, it was clean, but Heather had a look at it and she said, "Look, I think there's a big chunk of this where you're missing the opportunity to show emotion." So towards the end of the book, Jimmy discovers that his father has passed away in an accident. And I hadn't explored that at all. So I went straight to another scene with Debbie, his funny best friend, and it was all very low key. So she said, "You really need to take that opportunity and run with it, to
And
go away
tease it out.
and write some more stuff." So that was by this point the deadline seemed to be very tight. So I think I only had 10 days to do
Oh my God.
that. So I kind of Googled, the 7 stages of grieving. I wrote out on post-it notes all those things and then stuck them on my wall. I was like, right, what can he do in his circumstance that will show that path?
It's so beautiful. Like, you pulled it off.
Oh,
It's the absolute climax of the novel, isn't it?
thank
Like,
you.
that's that point, and how he juggles all that, and the depth of his feeling, and trying to even understand what he was feeling, and trying to articulate that through his mind, through
Yes.
his voice, I can
Yes.
imagine was a massive challenge.
Yeah, it was. So yeah, I was doing whenever I could in the evening, first thing in the morning, in between school activities. Yeah, that was a fun time. But I really enjoyed it because I hadn't gone back into any of those characters for, months. So I had to read a chunk of the book again just to get into that mindset and then go
And
from
it had some time to rest, so,
there.
and your brain had some time to rest. I've often said this to people, the long lead times that you do encounter once you sign up, often you do have these really long lead times, can actually really work in your favor because it is a resting period.
Yes.
And then when you do get back in, and you get back in with a Penguin editor, someone incredibly skilled, you're so well placed then to really, really bring it to its best.
Yes, and Heather, I feel as a first-time author, I'm just blessed because she was so nurturing. Her feedback, yes, it was gentle but strong. And I just really respected everything that she did. She kept me in the loop with the small wins, if somebody had said something nice. So she just kind of kept me rolling on, okay, I can do it, I can do it. And yeah, absolutely blessed with Heather.
Which leads me to ask you, because this is a point of curiosity for me, but also for a lot of my listeners, how do you handle the inner critic?
Ah. I would say when I started I didn't handle it very well. I know
So
we did.
when you say you started what?
As in started the whole writing process.
Right.
And even in life, I was a very shy child, always slightly anxious. So I've always doubted myself in many ways, including, I dropped out of university to, I got in to do drama, which I had always wanted to do. I wanted to be a Shakespearean actress, actually, and join the Royal Shakespeare Company. But anxiety, I didn't take my place, and that was a massive regret and still is. But I guess you could say I'm resilient because I did sort of a doubt had come up, a doubt had come up. So when it came to writing, I started off doubting, but then joining Scribbles and the Duck Pond, we talked a lot about the inner critic, and I loved hearing everybody's input into that and how they handled it. So as I got more confident, I used OneNote. So I started a folder in OneNote called When in Doubt. And anything that anybody said that was nice about my writing goes in there. So when I am really doubting, I will read through everything and go, no, you can do this. Just stop worrying, get on with
Oh,
it.
I love that. I have a coach at the moment, and she has, well, I've termed it a pocket full of praise. And she does the same thing. She collects whenever she says, when anyone says anything remotely nice,
Yes.
it down and put it in the same place. Yeah, I like to, I just like to call it pocket full of praise because,
Yeah, that's
wow.
lovely. Yes.
Good
Yes.
for
So
you. That's very proactive. And I love the way that you sort of reluctantly admitted that you're resilient because obviously you're incredibly resilient. Yeah, so I am so totally in awe of you, Fiona. Yeah,
you.
it's amazing what you're doing and what you're continuing to do. Yeah. So we've lost track. We've lost track. We were talking about, so we were talking about your pocket full of praise. We were talking about different ways of handling the inner critic. So what else? Is there any other ways that you do? Like, for instance, when you get your copy edit from your editor, that can, I call, call that feedback day. That can be a very dark day,
Yes.
and it can send people into a spiral, and you have to be professional about it, but you also have to feel it.
Yes,
So, did
definitely.
you have any way of handling that?
I think I just walked away to start with. I would see it arrive in the inbox. I'd have a quick flick through it, and then I would walk away. And I've started, I wouldn't say started doing yoga. I've done yoga on and off for years, but I do use that as a, just calm down, let it percolate,
Get
and then,
into your body
yeah,
rather
and then
than your head.
and then I have a little ritual of lighting a candle, putting some hand cream on that smells nice,
Oh, wow, I love that.
and I have the Doreen Virtue Angels guidance card. So then I pick a card, see what it's telling me, and then I'm in the writing zone. So it helps push everything away, and just, fight the worry, fight the anxiety, and just get in the zone and go for it.
And go for it. See, it can be done. I, you know, it's not, we shouldn't let the inner critic derail us. We just, when we can understand it's just part of the process,
Yes.
it
Having said
makes it.
that, in real life, other than it's ridiculous, but I still have anxieties and feel like people are judging me when I go to the petrol pump, for example. That's always been a thing. I do not know why. I hate filling up the car because I feel people are watching me. I'm going to do it wrong. And
Don't get me started, all right? This is a, we're talking here about books and writing. We're not, this is almost a coaching session, but I've got it. I think a lot of that goes actually, I'll just say really quickly. I think a lot of that goes back to being women. being raised to not be around big scary things like cars, right?
Yes.
Leave that to dad, leave that to the brother, leave that to whatever. And, oh my God, I'm here at the petrol station. I'm going to look like a complete dickhead when I'm totally there. I will always get out of putting petrol in the car if I can,
Yes.
because for the
Yeah.
same reason. It's like, who's looking at me and who thinks I'm a dickhead? Because.
So I have two sons that have learned to drive now, but with both of them, that would be my excuse. I'm like, you need to learn how to fill up the car. I'll just sit here and you do it. I got away with
Was a teenager, I actually worked for a few weeks in a petrol station, filling cars, checking oil, checking tires, doing the thing. And I still, to this day, hesitate when it's, I rehearse where the thing is to pop the cap open. I rehearse that before I go.
Oh, gee.
Oh, we're sensitive souls, aren't we?
We
We
are.
really are. Yeah,
As an
yeah.
aspiring writer, at least find your way to push your anxiety away for your words.
Yes, yeah. And of course, then, getting the contract and then getting the book coming out, every step of the way is confronting and is you're raw and you're vulnerable. So it doesn't just go away when the book comes out. There's a whole new set of worries then, isn't
Yeah, definitely. I have cried many times, yes. In joy and in fear.
Yeah.
Yes.
Fiona, I want to ask you, have you celebrated?
Really, not really. I'm hoping the launch will be that. I mean, I did obviously, have a little, I like red wine, had a little glass of red wine, and that all happened, and my husband and I went out for dinner. But in terms of,
Oh, that's good. That's that you
Yeah, we did. We
that's
absolutely did.
marking the occasion, marking
Yes.
the achievement. So
Yes.
I did want to ask you about the launch. How are you going to go about that?
So I'm going to be at my local bookshop, Bookface at Erina. And I've actually got Scott Levi, who's going to interview me. Scott is our local ABC radio presenter.
Right.
He's going to come along and we'll do some. So as you know from the book, the voice in there is very Australian, and I am not. I'm from England, have a, maybe a little bit of an accent, but I know a lot of people read excerpts at the launch. So I didn't think I could do it justice because I wanted the voice to be Australian. So I've got a lovely young boy who's an actor who's going to read it for me.
Oh, wow.
So he'll definitely be able to pull Jimmy off. And then we'll have some nibbles and drinks and signing.
Oh, it's just going to be lovely.
Very
Yeah.
exciting. Very
And
exciting.
I hope so. We'll see all that on social media and
Yes, absolutely. And then I'll be doing some signings around Hornsby and Leichhardt and Sydney. Actually going to do an event with Heather. She's going to talk with me,
Oh,
which I think.
that'll be great.
Yeah, I thought that would be really cool for other aspiring and emerging authors because it gives them an opportunity to hear, her side as well, which I'm
Totally.
fascinated in that. So,
So
yeah,
where's that event going to be?
that's going to be at Birkelow Leichhardt
Oh, okay. Yep.
on the 23rd of July.
Right. Okay. And again, social media all around, if we
Yes, yes.
can see that and get along to that. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let me see. I don't want to miss anything here. I just want to touch, you have touched on this a little bit, but I do want to go back to it because you've got three children
Yes.
and a husband. And do you work full
I do
time? That's
part-time, yes.
part time,
On
right?
the Writers' Festival.
Okay. So how do you juggle it all with in terms of your writing? Do you have a routine or do you just grab what you can?
Yeah, I suppose I have a routine now. When I wrote this, I didn't because the kids were much younger, and I was working, doing the post-production. And then a million kids' activities. So, in terms of the writing of this, it was all squeezed in around everything, scribbling in the car, etc. Now, one of my children's actually moved out. So, I have an older teenager and a 12-year-old. So, they're much more independent. And now I left my post-production job. So, I do part-time on the Writers' Festival, which is flexible in my own time, and then I still keep writing as a business, so I fill in extra hours doing writing. So there is dedicated time every single day, whether it's not necessarily writing the book, but it might be research, it might be watching a workshop, it might be just reading somebody else's work. So yeah, I very much treat it like a business, and luckily now I have more time to do that.
That's fantastic. So going forward, I assume that there's another book in the wings that you're working on, or
Well, I finished one. I've actually just submitted it to Heather, so who knows? That's the YA, younger YA one. It is very, very different, so who knows what will happen? And then now I'm actually in the doubting phase. What am I going to do now? So now I've got to work through all that one. I've kind of got four projects that I dip in and out of, but I haven't got that feeling yet where you know you want to be in them for a year or more to get them ready.
So you do have multiple things going at the same time, but you have a different degree of energy for them.
Yeah, definitely. I'm not a person that can stick to one thing in any respect of my life. So yeah, I have to go with what I feel like on the day until I know that's the project I want to stick with.
So it's exciting. It's really, it's just we're just all here for you. I mean, I think this book is going to do really well. You're the sage say. So I don't think this is going to disappear very quickly. I think being Jimmy Baxter, I love what Katrina said, Kate Manisted said on the back. She said, "This is one of the most beautiful, uplifting stories I've read in a long time. Everyone who reads it will fall in love with Jimmy Baxter." But that wasn't the bit that I was thinking of. She said somewhere else. It must have been another quote somewhere. She said that it's Jimmy Baxter has settled in my thoughts and heart and doesn't look like leaving anytime soon. And she's nailed it, because
Oh.
that's how it works. It has this charm and this. I don't know. This just so, as I said, it's so tender, it's so sensitive, and it just does land like that. And you carry it with you. And I think that's the sign of a really, really great story. So,
Thank you. Thank you. Well,
Fiona
that's the kind of
Lloyd,
thing.
Fiona Lloyd, you have absolutely pulled this off.
Well, in all honesty, it wouldn't be pulled off without you and your community.
Thank you.
Because genuinely, I mean, you were the first group that I joined, and just the wealth of knowledge, the community, I was blown away that I could have an answer from a real published author in your group. So Kate Whittle was one of the first people that I made contact with, and in fact Kate was instrumental in how I dealt with Duke in the book. I threw out some questions and scribbles at one point about how do you deal with a bully, what's and her feedback was totally on my mind, and how I worked out what I was going to do with him.
Kate, if you're listening, we're indebted
And
to
I'm still waiting to
darling.
meet you and have a cup of tea, Kate. So
So you and Kate haven't crossed paths
not no, because
in real
she's in
life.
Canberra, I think, and I'm up on the Central Coast in New South Wales, so we
I
haven't.
lose track of who's been to what, because I remember you at the Scribbles Masterclass in 20, whenever it was, but mainly because I have this fantastic photo. I have this fantastic photo of you entering the classroom. It's like something you probably wouldn't remember, but welcome back, Cotter. It reminds me of that. So you're coming into the classroom, your hair's blowing, and I think you've got flowers.
Yeah.
And it's just such a beautiful photo, and I remember that. That was quite a big class. I thought
Yes.
Kate Whittle was at that class. Maybe she was at the one the following year, but
I'm
yeah,
not sure.
obviously not. No.
But I
But
did get to meet my critique buddy Shana, who lives down there. So we'd been online for over a year. And then I was, oh, I can meet you for real. So that was
Yeah,
fun.
yeah. No, it's just been wonderful to watch and just to see you evolving and to see this. It's such a prize, it's such a win, and it's such a nod to lots of hard work and dedication, and sweat and grit and
Thank you
perseverance,
so
but
much.
also talent. You know, you have a talent, you accepted the calling, you rose to the challenge, and you did it. So I'm just so thrilled for you. I'm so thrilled for you. Thank you so much for joining us today, Fiona. Is there anything you'd like to add before we wind up?
I just want to say, well, thank you, obviously, to you and your community, but really for aspiring and emerging authors listening, just go for it. You don't know, Jen's focus on play is really important. That's what will open the channels, I think. And yeah, just go for it.
Just go for it, yeah. Yep. They're simple words, but they just carry everything, don't they? Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's that question, you know, that you can ask yourself, why not me? You know, why not me? If you can prove to me in a court of law that you aren't able to do this or allowed to do this, I might listen, but otherwise it's why not me?
Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly. If someone else can do it, you can do
Totally.
it.
Thank you so much, Fiona, and God bless Jimmy Baxter and his as he comes out into the
Safe sailing, Jimmy.
world. Yeah, thanks. Thanks a lot, Fiona. We'll see you again soon.
Thanks, Jen.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for hanging out with me today. If you want more ducky goodness, pop over to the website www.girlandduck.com. Or you can find me on Instagram at Jen E. Storer, Jen E. Storer. Bye for now.